Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Bible study would happen 3 times a day, sometimes for up to 12 hours. There was one instance where apparently went on for 24 hours and military-style training. One of the cult members who spoke to her sister about her time there said that apparently nobody wanted to leave even during these 24-hour Bible practices because they fully believed he was a prophet. So he had them eating out the palm of his hand, including the children.
What were they eating, though?
He had not certain fruits or dairy, depending on how old they were.
Meats and fruits.
Well, meats and cheeses always pleases.
My God.
We thought that was over. Got it back.
It's back.
So he instructed his followers to fight each other to prepare for what his teaching centered around, which was the coming judgment day.
How did you spell coming? To me, legit the best one we've ever done.
Yeah, that's so bad to me. But I think we know for now that my experience is always not the case.
We can do with some hype then. It's been a while.
I feel the energy. I think it's because we've been a while. Sorry about that impromptu
break. Yeah, so welcome to season two, everyone.
Yeah, 100% this is season two. What?
Yeah, we didn't tell them that season one ended, but season two has begun. We had a week off.
It's just fluid. Yeah, we did have a week off. Great time. What do you get up to?
Life, as usual. I've been doing nothing exciting. Actually, I did go away with work and got heavily pissed.
Where?
We went to a little, what would be the word? We went to meet a company that could potentially be selling us a lot of wood chippers.
Oh, and they took us out.
Big business deals. They took us out for a nice meal. And a nice hotel as well. And we got to the hotel, took me to my room and said, any drink you want, put on room 29.
What'd you go for? First thing you go for?
First hour, I had 5 Guinnesses.
Nice. In your room, yourself?
No, I'm not that sad.
Down in the in the bar?
Quick shower, did my hair. Did my hair, 5 Guinnesses, 2 espresso martinis.
Yep.
About 8 gimlets.
Gimlet being, is it gin based?
The gin cocktail, so it's gin, lime juice, sugar syrup, on ice, bosh. Well, it's not on ice, shaken, not stirred.
Ah!
Yeah.
Shaken, not stirred.
About 8 of them.
007.
And then a couple shots of baby Guinness, and then went to bed.
Did you have a hangover from all that mixing?
I wasn't too bad, you know. I felt all right, and then towards the day went on, it was, I was suffering.
Difficult.
But then they took us for lunch as well.
Yeah. But where was it? Did you say? I forgot already.
I can't remember either.
What did you not say? Oh, you didn't say?
I didn't say, no.
Oh.
It was about 4 hours away from here, so it was a long way.
And you can't remember north, south?
Southish.
Excellent.
I definitely went on the M25 at some point, so that counts.
Okay,
I really can't remember. It will come back to me. If it does, I'll bring it up.
Espresso martinis are, I would say, one of my favourite cocktails.
It's like a...
Because you get everything from it.
Yeah, it's like a legal cocaine.
Or an adult vodka Red Bull.
Yeah. A naughty coffee.
A naughty coffee.
Yeah.
Exactly. And not one of those Irish coffees with whiskey in it, because fuck that noise. Although you're drinking whiskey right now.
Yeah, the whiskey's on. It's a bourbon.
Why are you not using your whiskey glass?
Right. Good point. This is another one you got me, though. Let's not be like that.
Yeah, the other one I got you.
Other one's for special occasions.
Was painful to get.
This for special occasions.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
And my ice cubes are too big. I am on the maker's mark.
That's not one I got you, is it?
No, I'm running out of the ones you got me, so I need you to do another trip for me.
Yeah, okay.
Nice. Sick. How's your time off been?
It's reverse bootlegging.
I don't know what that
means. When I bring alcohol out of America.
Yeah, it is. keep that
literally
bootlegging
doing
in
the
reverse.
Opposite. Al Capone in reverse. what did I do? Literally not much. I spent the majority of the weekend reading, not doing an awful lot.
Anything interesting?
You know, the Fourth Wing books?
Yeah,
so it's
like,
it's not fairy smut this time, it's dragon smut. Whoa. Literally the dragon's fucking it.
That fantasy lifestyle.
Yeah. I love it. It's escapism.
Fucking dragons. Literally
fucking dragons. Dragons
mid-air?
Are fucking... I don't know. They don't go into detail. They just say that they're fucking. I was like,
shouldn't
wow.
they breathe fire whilst they're fucking?
Probably. They're fireproof, so it makes sense. They breathe fire at each other.
Larry.
Spicy.
Literally hot.
Spicy. Literally so hot. Spicy. Yeah, so not much to report. I'm with plague.
You are with plague, the Americans would say.
Yeah.
Plague.
Plague, like Craig.
Oh,
yeah,
mate, whenever I watch Americans saying Craig, I want to headbutt a wall.
There's so much of it, and especially the book that I'm reading is very heavily written in like an American tone.
Yeah.
So they say things that I didn't even realise the differences between American English and English, which are things like addicting instead of addictive.
Right.
And you say, oh, that's really addictive, like a espresso martini. Espresso martinis are really addictive. But an American would say an espresso martini is really addicting, and I really didn't like that.
Freaks. Talking about Americans.
Yeah, they're freaks.
See Charlie Kirk?
Yeah, R.I.P.
Did you watch the video?
Yeah.
Brutal, mate.
It's crazy.
Brutal.
I expected more of a spurt, but it was more like a gush.
Well, I think I did. I think I saw something online, and it's because I think there was a slow-mo of like a bullet doing a weird thing, and by the sounds of it, hit him in a... bulletproof vest, and it's ricocheted up into his neck.
You reckon?
Well, if you there's a very specific video where you see this little black thing like bounce off him, and then it goes up here, and then it disappears, and then
damn.
So that's why I think he reacted like he did, because it would have either hit the what's the nerve in there? Well, it hit the femoral artery for one, but it might have clipped his brain.
Femoral arteries in the thigh.
Not as
carotid. Femoral,
then. Carotid. And then carotid potentially artery. Clipped him in the brain.
Oh, shit. Yeah, he was dead straight away.
Oh, mate. Yeah, but that
straight
video
straight away.
I was watching it in bed. It's a
nice
little...
you?
I didn't
what,
mean
when
to.
When it happened?
I didn't mean to. I was just on Reddit and I was flicking through
to.
Videos. And it's like, oh, Charlie Kirk shot. I thought, fuck off. Surely not. Yep, dead.
Yeah, Lucas showed it to me. I was like,
brutal.
Fuck.
Yeah, I showed it
to
Rachel
absolutely
straight
brutal.
Away.
Brutal. Did you see the messages that the shooter was supposed to send to his roommate?
Mate, that's made me die.
And everyone's like, sound exactly like the Department of Justice has just gone
if
out.
If you
like,
read
hmm,
this.
What would the youth be saying today?
If you read this, you are gay, LMAO.
There is a police vehicle next to the exact rifle that I used.
Christ, man.
I only think of you, my love.
Oh, the, yeah, the
22-year-old. 22-year-old. Yeah, the text messages. Mm. Oh,
stupid.
What, the writing on the bullet?
Yeah, sorry, that's what I thought
yeah,
you meant.
Yeah, yeah, catch this one, you fascist.
I mean...
It's really interesting to see the difference in the way that this guy's treated compared to Luca Mangione.
Yeah.
Mangione.
Yeah, you are right.
Luca, is that his name?
Yeah.
The guy that killed the healthcare CEO. Because obviously the healthcare CEO, he's just a faceless name of an organisation.
Scumbag still.
Suffering. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then Charlie Kirk, people know his family, his wife. He's like an actual known figure that people know about him, not just his job.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people are so... And then it's immediately drawn into left versus right.
And wasn't he very much MAGA as well? Mr.
Really
Shooter.
Really right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wait. The Shooter?
I think
apparently,
so.
Yeah. No, I think he was quite left-leaning, but his dad was...
Oh, that was
in
yeah,
his
yeah,
text
yeah.
messages, he said his dad's very MAGA. Yeah. And then it's either his dad or his neighbour used to work in the sheriff's department. I've seen both.
It
unless it's
be,
literally both of them.
Can't be long till that country's in civil war.
Oh, 100%. Did you watch the film Civil War?
Fucking awesome movie.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
a good
a
movie, but yeah, it's seeming more and more. Like it's going to happen. But those conversations, the left versus the right, are everywhere. It's not just America. But
oh, it's come here, isn't it? I saw like a video of fucking Scunthorpe or something with Charlie Kirk signs up. So what are you doing,
man?
Yeah, it's just
he
mental.
Would have no idea that his biggest supporters were in fucking Scunthorpe.
I don't know where Scunthorpe is.
Isn't that Lincolnshire?
Don't know. That would be your... can't be down your ends. Look at you with your second monitor.
Scunthorpe United
FC. You think you're so cool.
Lincolnshire, North Lincolnshire.
Fair play.
I am.
So now you've got your second screen. Can you constantly see me now?
Yeah, I can constantly see you.
You can now watch my reactions because I react to a fair few things and you don't. You obviously can't see me. So.
Yes. Yeah, I need to be able to see you as well. There's a place called The Pods in Scunthorpe, which is quite nice. There's a trampoline park, Air Kings Trampoline Park, Ashbyville Nature Reserve. It looks quite industrial, to be fair. Nice bit of green.
Shithole.
Imagine it's quite cheap. Yeah. Should we look up the average house prices?
Do you reckon we shouldn't? Because we are on one. We're not even introduced what we're up to today.
155,000 to 160,000.
It's not bad. Free bed.
And then recent estimate in September 25 showing an average of £155,237.
So if anyone's looking into moving and buying their first home, go to Scunthorpe.
Yeah, it's pretty low to be fair.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there you go. There's some housing opportunities
on from our
for
catch
people.
Up.
Moving swiftly on.
We've had an email.
Oh my God, yes, we have had an email. Do you know how much I got so excited when I saw it? And then I immediately told the person I was with. And they were like, I don't get it. And I was like, just you're nothing to do with me.
Yeah, when it popped up as an email and then all the title was Chris's hair, I thought, yeah. Right, what is going on here? And I've been called, guys, here's the reveal. Dwight
it's
Schrute.
It's the font.
Dwight Schrute.
Can you read it out word for word?
So,
shout out the guy
from
that sent it in.
David Burnside. Cunt.
Oh, what a name. Oh, do you know him?
Yeah, but we ignore that.
Oh, okay.
Chris has a fringe like Dwight K. Schrute. Kind regards.
I like the K.
Bernie.
And I did like the kind regards too.
So it was nice.
Yeah, very formal.
Very happy. Putting the hat back on.
I'm still getting more. I can kind of see where he's coming from. And perhaps next time you need to come with glasses. But ooh. I do see more Prince Charming.
Thank you
Shrek.
Very much. I'll take that one. That one's
but
better.
But he is a cunt, which you also would like that.
So. I'll agree with that. Can't move past that.
Swings and roundabouts.
Swings and roundabouts. Right, what are we doing? Who are we talking about?
Oh, after my excellent clue, I did have somebody guess.
Oh, did you? Did they get it?
They did, and they were quite annoyed when you stepped in and said Koresh instead of Kresh.
Sorry.
Because they were like, that was my one opportunity to actually get one of these clues.
Oh, did I literally give it away?
Well, because he said, I would have already got it, because I think he said he already knew, because he'd listened to a podcast on it.
Okay.
But then when you stepped in, he was like, that's just completely taken the win for me there. So we've had one correct. Did you have anyone guess correctly?
No one. So they win the
key ring. Key rings. We need to actually make a note. Yeah. And on my second monitor, I shall make the note right now.
Key wrong.
Key ring winners. So you will put in who won for old Billy No Pants.
Cooper. Was it? Or was it Calamari? Can't remember. One of them.
And then Wacky Waco. Cool.
Done.
Keywing winners.
Cool.
Keyring's really hard to say without going keywing.
Oh yeah, we haven't actually announced what the clue led to, have we?
Oh shit! Yeah, Waco Siege. David
Waco
Koresh.
Siege. David Koresh, head paedophile of the Catholic
Davidians.
Church. Are they Catholic?
No, Seventh-day Adventist.
What? I'll find out. I will find out. It's coming up.
It's Baptist Church.
Baptist.
Southern Baptist Church. The
all
mental
the same
ones.
To me.
Let me have a look. What kind of?
It's just not in your research.
Christians. Well, I've literally given you Baptists. Baptists. Protestant. Obviously.
Obvs.
Obviously. So, yeah, they're...
Does that mean they're for Protestant. The IRA or against?
Ooh, excellent question. Well, David Koresh has kind of made up whatever he wanted, used the scripture and said, God told me this. So
God told
I suppose
me to
if it,
rape children.
God literally told me I needed to take a 14-year-old as my wife. And then the second time he tried it, everyone was like, yeah, sure, sounds like a good plan to me.
God just told me that was wrong when
God
I tried it.
Me.
Wait, what?
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 Bit of a Freudian slip there.
Fuck, sorry.
Cool.
Let's move in.
Shall we dive right into it? So David Koresh was born on the 17th of August, 1959 in Houston, Texas, to unmarried parents and rather a strange couple, which I think kind of sets us up for the reasons David might be why he is, because he didn't get off to the best start. A 20-year-old Bobby Wayne Howell and 14-year-old Bonnie Sue Clark. So his mum was 14
names.
Years old.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean...
Sorry,
you
well,
just
I was his sister.
Names. Yeah, you just said, no, that's his mum.
Okay.
So 2 years after the birth, the relationship broke down. Apparently, there's some reports that he might have been abusive to her. Yes, and also she went through puberty.
It's like Leonardo DiCaprio, but for paedophiles.
Yeah, like 10 times
You're
worse.
You're 16
Although
now.
7 year age gap is nothing to him.
What is it? Is it half your age plus 7? Is that the legal age limit?
Do you know how many times I've heard that recently in the last few months? I don't know what it is about men, but they're just like, half your age plus 7.
It does work, though.
Does it?
Yeah, unless you're 10. Well, no, because then they're older than you, so that's a win. You're with a 12-year-old. Know what I mean?
Do you know what I mean? You get me. Either way, Bobby Wayne Howell did not half his age and plus 7. He halved his age and plus 4. Plus 4.
Plus 4. Plus 4.
Added 4.
Move forward.
And 2 years after the birth, the relationship broke down. And Koresh didn't actually meet his father until he was 17 years old. So after a second failed marriage with an abusive husband, Joseph Joe Golden. Sorry, not a second. Her first marriage.
Joseph J. Gold.
Man. Joe Golden. Bonnie moved away to Dallas in 1962, but she placed her son in the care of her mother and an older sister when he was 4 years old. So Bonnie's mother pretended to be Koresh's mother. So his grandma pretended to be his mum. And Bonnie would pose as an aunt whenever she occasionally visited
right.
him.
Okay.
Already setting up for a very tumultuous childhood, and that is just the start of it.
Sounds grim.
Yeah, pretty grim. So Koresh described his early childhood as lonely. He loved the outdoors. He played alone outside a lot when he was a youngster. But he also loved to listen to preachers on the radio, and he read the Bible cover to cover multiple times, in particular noting the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And what we go on to see is that he probably took a bit more from the Old Testament than the New Testament.
Touching kids.
Well, yeah, just more aggressive.
That
and
was
yes,
the fifth commandment in the Old Testament.
Was it
thou
really?
Thou must touch kids.
Thou must commit paedophilia.
Thou must commit noncery.
Shaken, that's what Joan was preaching. Yeah.
Is that a new
and
word?
And so it says...
When did nonce become a word?
Oh,
what's the history
online?
Behind the word nonce? I'm loving this double
history
screen stuff.
History of nonce.
Someone's ringing the police on you.
Oh, I've got the AI overview.
That'll do.
Doesn't give me a time.
No.
Old English phrase, for the nonce, meaning for the time being. Or
for the
this
nonce!
One time.
Oh. It had a different origination.
But obviously now it's... it doesn't
It's adapted
say.
To paedophile.
It's
fair.
Meant to be not on... What is it meant to be?
Not Nonce. On
Origin.
No children's eggs. No.
No, I want the actual one.
Is it an acronym, is it?
Etymology, 1975. Apparently, not on normal something.
Not on normal exercise. Courtyard exercise.
There you go.
What's that got to
1975, derived from the British criminal slang.
Fair
nonce,
enough.
Stupid, worthless individual.
Or there's not of normal criminal element.
Yeah. Prison slang also said to be not a normal communal exercise, Stevens 2012, but this is likely a backronym. So yeah, one of those acronyms British, it doesn't actually say. Yeah, well, oh yeah, nonce.
Do Americans use the word nonce?
I don't think they do. But feel free to email in and correct us and well, also to say nonce, who either of us so. Looks like. Yes, true. It's
banished.
Yes, probably. Probably going to outlaw it. So with Bonnie then marries for a second time in 1964 to a merchant marine named Roy Holderman. And she felt at last in a stable enough position for her to raise David herself. So at 5 years old, Bonnie tells David that
I'm
she
your
is
mama.
Actually his mother.
I'm your mama, boy.
I'm your mother.
Why is she so annoyed? All right, yeah. Who was that to? Zoe?
EastEnders. No, to... Fuck, what's her name?
Zoe was fit.
Not Zoe.
Didn't know
Lacey
she had more than one
Turner.
Child. Lacey
Turner, what's her name? Stacey.
Zoe. Oh, Stacey. Zoe was her mate, wasn't it? Yeah, Stacey was all right
sister,
as well.
Wasn't it?
Don't know.
And then... Or her aunt? I can't remember.
Is that
oh,
when she
fuck,
was with Alfie Moon? Alfie!
Are you thinking of Patsy Kensit? Oh no, she was with Rory.
She was with Alfie Moon.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so complicated. I do remember that live episode.
Oh, when Bradley died.
Yeah, when Bradley
fell
yeeted
off the
himself
roof.
Off the roof.
Yeah.
Off the roof.
Off the roof.
And that was when he was with Stacey.
Yeah, but he was also shagging his dad, Max. She was shagging her.
Like,
Bradley
wasn't
shagging
I don't remember
his dad.
That storyline.
Yeah, yeah. Stacey was shagging
very
Bradley's dad.
So apparently the admission that his aunt was actually his sister.
Back to the subject.
Somehow carried with him for his whole life, which
was that
is
his
mental.
Name from birth, by the way?
No, it was Segway. Not. Segway. His name from birth is...
Vernon. How's that not in your notes, mate?
It is in my notes. Vernon Wayne Howell.
Vernon Wayne Howell.
I just didn't put it at the top.
Fair enough. Vernon.
Yeah, so he was born Vernon Wayne Howell.
Vernon Wayne Dursley.
After Bobby Wayne Howell. He changes his name later, but just for the sake of ease, I'll just call him David or Koresh, either one, in my notes.
Okay.
Well, what segue? Were you segueing to something? Or
no.
You just wanted to... Okay.
Talking about Vernon Dursley... Do you know they're bringing out a new Harry Potter audiobook?
No.
Great cast.
Why?
It's just brilliant. Should I get it
Who's
up?
Who's in it?
Oh, you got your second monitor.
Do you want me to get it up?
Yeah, get it up. Look, we're having so much fun with this second monitor. We're 20 minutes in and we've done absolutely nothing. The haters are going to come for us on this one. It's what happens when we don't speak to each other for a week.
Okay. Hugh Laurie as Dumbledore,
Massive.
Matthew McFadden as Voldemort, Riz Ahmed as Snape, Michelle Gomez as McGonagall, and Cush Jumbo as the narrator.
Keira Knightley's in it.
Really?
Yeah. I think she is playing, can't remember now. But who's the, have you watched Luther?
She's Professor Umbridge.
Who? Knightley?
Yeah.
Have you watched Luther?
Yeah.
Who's the actress Alice. From that? She's the fit one.
I love her.
She's playing Bellatrix.
Ruth Wilson.
Yeah. She'll be fucking, she'll be good at that.
Oh my God. Mad-Eye Moody is James McAvoy.
Mate, it's a massive
Arthur
cast.
Arthur Weasley, Simon Pegg. Oh, Rubus Hagrid is Mark Addy. Oh, Professor Lupin, Ewan Rian. He's a bastard. Snow. Ramsay Snow?
Okay, yeah.
Is he?
Might know. Be. Not anyway. Ramsay. Oh, yeah, the one that was from... What was that programme when they had super... Yeah, mate.
Yeah.
Check us out.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Back to Waco.
Back to Waco. So, to make the tumultuous situation worse, even after his mother told him, yo, I'm your mum, not your auntie.
I'm your mum, my bitch.
It said at this time that Koresh was sexually abused by one of his mother's male relatives.
You could say Koresh was caressed.
He certainly was, and as we've already stated, you don't have to have sex with someone to be molested.
I really want to make a joke, but I won't. because it would be way too far.
Not like you to hold back.
Can you joke about the R word? I don't think so, can you? Not in this day and age. It's 2025.
No, probably not. So Koresh described his... We've already said this, haven't we? But
don't know.
His early childhood being...
He loved the outdoors. Yeah.
He listened to preachers on the radio.
I reckon he ate worms.
Due to his poor study skills and dyslexia, partially caused by poor eyesight, he was put into special education classes.
Have you got dyslexia?
Bullied. Special, I think so. It's special. Only when I'm on this. Bullied by his classmates, on one occasion apparently being raped by a group of older boys, but this claim has never been corroborated.
It's like rapeception, because when he's older... That'd be a fun film, wouldn't it? Oh, that viewership is going to dwindle. It's not big enough anyway. Oh, sorry.
Okay. So matters improved about the age of 12 when Koresh became interested in sport, which he was good at, and it developed his physique. But despite this turnaround, he dropped out of school in his
junior
year.
Do we know what sport?
No, it just says sports. I'm guessing loads of them. You know what the Americans are like for sport.
All of them.
And in his junior year, at the age of 16, he tried various jobs, but was either fired for them or abandoned them each time. But the main thing he wanted to do was wanted to become a rock star. So he grew his hair out long.
Ooh.
And he even visited LA to play in various venues to try and raise his profile. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. So he returned and followed in the footsteps of his father and became a... Can you guess?
Pedophile. Who is your hero? My daddy.
I mean, that is so true. That is true. You don't get paid for that, though. No, carpenter,
yeah. Like Jesus.
Like Jesus. I've just got in my comments, Jesus? Question mark. So at the age of 19, Koresh had an illegal sexual relationship with a 16-year-old.
Told you.
Pregnant, which was illegal in Texas. But
only in Texas?
I mean, you know what the US is like, but that relationship was illegal.
Well, 16's cool here, isn't it? Well, not cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you can have kids at 16. Yeah. Well, it's the age of sexual consent here, yeah.
Yeah.
But he had managed to build up a relationship with this girl's father to the point that he let them sleep in the same room together.
Oh, God.
He never saw the resulting daughter, though. Obviously, the family wasn't very happy with him for impregnating their 16-year-old.
Fair.
And the teenage mother thought that he was unfit to be a father, so she moved away and refused to see him. Mm. After this, he claimed to become a born-again Christian in the Southern Baptist Church, which, as we know, is a branch of Protestantism, and soon joined his mother's denomination, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Adventist. Yeah.
Right.
And they believe that there is a sanctuary in heaven set up by God, and that Jesus administrates on their behalf. They also have some funny old beliefs about there being apocalypses and judgment days and that sort of thing, which we'll go into in more detail when we talk about the Branch Davidians.
Can't wait.
There, Koresh, then 20, had a relationship with a pastor's daughter. Can you guess how old she was?
15.
Yeah, 15.
He's a real daddy's
Berlin.
Boy.
Sandy Berlin.
Sandy Berlin.
That's
a great
name.
A lot of effort. I'm Sandy Berlin.
I'm 15 years old. I want a relationship with an older man.
Please fill my schnitzel with your man mayonnaise.
Give me your sauerkraut.
Put your sauerkraut on my schnitzel. Oh, 15.
Excellent. Yes, 15. And they began a 2-year relationship after Koresh became obsessed with her. During their courtship, whilst praying for guidance one day, Koresh allegedly opened his eyes and found the Bible open at a very convenient verse, which is a theme that we'll go into in more detail. Open at Isaiah 34:16, stating that none should want for her mate. Which he it read to be...
Touch who you want.
Touch the children. Children,
touch them
good
all.
To go.
Touch them all.
This specific one, pastor's daughter, that's the one.
Cool.
This is a theme of his life, as we've already said. And he knew the Bible so well, he could manipulate the verses to justify whatever point he had. And he believed that it was a sign from God. And Koresh approached the pastor and told him that God wanted him to have his daughter as a wife. Nice. How do you think the pastor reacted?
Wait, he wanted to marry his daughter?
He was like, God told me.
Yeah.
That Sandy Berlin.
Yeah.
Your 15-year-old daughter.
Oh, the pastor's
should
daughter.
Be my wife. The pastor's daughter, yeah.
Right. I bet he was well up for that.
Funnily enough, he dismissed the suggestion
and forbade
him from ever seeing her again, which Koresh promptly ignored. When the pastor found out about them carrying on their relationship, he was furious at him, and they were repressed when the congregation found out, were absolutely repulsed by his obsession.
How far do you reckon Koresh would have gotten his paedophilic career if the nonce hunters were available back then?
Oh, yeah, Hunter from the Netflix show.
No, just the people that hunt nonces on YouTube. I'm going to lose my job. I'm on my holiday.
That's a really good shout, because it would have had to have happened in modern day.
Yeah.
Because he'd need to be doing his grooming online. And I suppose he would have done that, wouldn't he? Because this was 19, like the majority, yeah. I mean, this was in the 80s.
He'd get clarted now real quick. It wouldn't happen anymore, would it?
Pussy clarted.
Yeah, the pussy. Pussy.
Pussy. Not even 80s, 70s. He was born 1959. He was 20, 79.
Good maths.
79 into early 80s.
Quick maths.
So he was then expelled from the church. And it was rumoured that prior to being kicked out of the church, he tried to set a dress code for the female parishioners, telling their fathers and husbands that they were immodest.
Oh, I was going to go with like mini skirts and that.
Yeah, really confusing, because on the one hand he wants to fuck everyone, and then on the other hand
you're wearing too little now, darling.
Yeah, no.
Over 16, full skirt, long sleeve top, burqa. Under 16, bikini.
Yeah.
I sound like a nonce.
Let's not fuck about here. He didn't want the ones of legal age.
No.
Consent kind of like negates him having to get God to say everything.
Yeah.
If there was legal consent, God wouldn't have to intervene on his behalf, and he wouldn't be a special chosen one. So he's like, I want the kids.
That's my God.
Yeah. Nice.
Nice.
So another little vignette from this time in this church. Whilst reading the Bible, he claimed to be approached by a Holy Spirit sent from God, which he claimed to be a large-breasted woman.
Damn.
He got titty on the brain. I don't know, woman, but you never know with David
Koresh. Well, woman says it all, doesn't it?
You never know.
Whoa, man.
Whoa, man. What?
What?
So, in the summer of 1981, 2 years after all of this has happened, apparently, although it doesn't really make sense. 2 years after. Whatever. 1981. Koresh's next move was to Waco, Texas, where he joined the Branch Davidians, and they were a splinter group of the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist Church. They were probably unaware of his previous actions at the last church, hence they let him in.
Okay.
So Benjamin Roden, who died in 1978, had created the Branch group in 1955 with new teachings that were not connected with the original Davidians, believing that the coming of Jesus was imminent, and which would be an apocalypse-level event.
Jesus. This is Ben
Roden.
It's going
to be a judgment day. Ben Roden.
Roden.
Without the T.
So did they not cross over?
He was dead by the time. So it's 1981 when...
And he died in 79?
78, yeah.
78, okay.
So they didn't cross over.
Yeah.
He found a sense of belonging here, and he began to play his guitar at services in the Mount Carmel Centre. So we'll go into the Branch Davidians in a second. But he will become more and more influential in the group, becoming more confident and charming and adept at public speaking, and was viewed as a very capable and very pious man. He then made the bold statement that he was the last prophet and therefore should be regarded as the new leader of the branch, which caused a lot of friction. Now, should we take a second?
Yeah.
But perhaps an interesting fact about Waco, Texas.
Go on.
So Waco is where they invented Dr. Pepper.
Infected. You've been infected.
I've been infected.
I fucking love Dr. Pepper.
I don't. It's the false cherry scent flavour.
There is no flavour. There's no flavour to Dr. It is its own
flavour. It's cherry. Flavor. Cherry flavour.
No, don't
agree. But it's
agree
got
with that
like fake almond marzipan-y kind of flavour to it.
Everything it needs to be.
No, I don't like it.
But there's a fine line with Dr. Pepper. If it's slightly too warm or slightly too flat, it's disgusting. Perfect temperature. Cold out the fridge. A nice fizz to it. Delicious. Doesn't mix well with any alcohol, I've found.
No, not even vodka.
No, I'm not a big vodka man anymore. I think I ruined my childhood with vodka. Not my
childhood. Yeah, it's the first drink, isn't it?
Yeah, especially like £3 vodka from Sainsbury's mixed with some awful Coca-Cola or something.
That sounds right.
Gets you drunk, though. It certainly does.
Can you guess when Dr. Pepper was invented?
1900s. Shit. 1800s.
Yep.
Second half of that century.
Yep.
Last quarter of that century.
Yep.
1883.
Oh, you're so close. Oh, 1885.
Damn. Oh, shit. That's a good guess. I'm happy with that.
So Dr. Pepper was invented in 1885 by pharmacist Charles Alderton at Morrison's Old Corner Drug Store in Waco, Texas.
Is that pre or post Coca-Cola?
Ooh, shall I look?
What came first, the pepper or the Coke? Go on.
1886.
Shit. Dr. Pepper's the big one. Dr. Pepper's the original fucking G. Is that the first carbonated drink then?
Pepsi was 1893 in North Carolina.
So is Dr. Pepper the number one?
Oldest soda. Vernon's ginger ale.
Nah, that's boring,
1866.
Mate. When
then
did
it
Iron Brew
Dr.
come in?
Dr. Pepper. Iron Brew.
Should have been spoken about on the William Wallace one, by the way.
Oh, I think it's 1901, you know? No.
They ruined that drink when the sugar tax came in, you know.
Yeah, 1901.
You can still get the Orig in Scotland, and it is the finest drink on the planet.
What, you can't get one with sugar here?
Sugar tax, mate, ruined it. Someone told me once that in Scotland they did, McDonald's did Iron Brew, and I got really excited, but it was a lie.
Oh, no, maybe it did. Maybe it used to.
Could have done.
Okay, so do you want to hear more about Dr. Pepper, or should we just skip over it?
What do the fans want? Dr. Pepper.
Did you hear that? I heard that. The will of them through the headphones. So Alderton, inspired by the mix of fruit syrup aromas, created the unique 23-ingredient flavour and first offered it to store owner Wade Morrison.
Have you got the ingredients?
Also liked it. No.
Oh, I wanted to have a guess at all of them.
Oh. Morrison then named the drink Dr. Pepper, and later, with beverage chemist Robert S. Lazenby, established a Dr. Pepper company in 1891 to mass produce the product and distribute the beverage. What?
Such a pointless bit of information. We'll cover next week on the Backseat Historian. We're covering Dr. Pepper. Oh, shall we?
Oh, the 23 flavours are a mystery.
I reckon vanilla's in there.
Cherry.
I don't get it. I really don't. Almonds and vanilla, that's all I'm getting there.
yeah, this, the almonds, it, ugh, hate
it. Oh, fuck off. Right, let's get back to it.
Oh, fuck off. Okay, so the Branch Davidians. The Branch Davidians, also known as the Branch, were a religious group that originated in 1955 from a schism from the Shepherd's Rod Davidians following the death of the founder. So the founder believed he created the Davidians based on the prophecy of an imminent apocalypse involving the second coming of Jesus and the defeat of evil armies of Babylon. As the original Davidian group gained members, the leadership then moved from the church on a hilltop to several miles east of Waco.
What was his name again? David Koresh?
Yeah.
Davidian.
Yeah, so that's why he changes it. Yeah. Which we'll get onto.
Such a prick.
Which is
mate.
Everything we'll get onto.
Such a prick.
So they main named this hill that they put this Davidian group on called Mount Carmel. And I thought, oh, is that just the Americans butchering
the caramel?
No, it That's is Carmel, C-A-R-M-E-L, after a mountain in Israel, mentioned in Joshua 19:26 in the Bible's Old Testament. On Rodin's death, so we spoke about the founder of this branch of the Davidians.
Yeah.
The control of the Branch Davidians fell to his wife, Lois Rodin. Lois considered their son, George Rodin, to be unfit to assume the position of prophet. Instead, she groomed Vernon Wayne Howe, later known as David Koresh, to
Here
be her
are.
Successor. Having formed what is suspected to be a sexual relationship with each other, she was in her late 60s.
At least he's gone up.
Yes. It's
How old is he
crazy.
Here? Is this the half your age plus seven?
He's in his... This is, what, 81? So he's 22?
Ah, okay, yeah, that's way off.
Yeah. And David claimed that he claimed God told him that a child from their union would be prophesied as the chosen one, anointed by God, making her son George real upset. Not only is this guy banging his mum, he's also like, you're irrelevant. We're going to have a kid together and that's going to be the chosen one. Yeah, nice.
Nice.
So later that year, Lois allowed David to preach his own sermon titled The Serpent's Root. I'm really struggling.
It's all right, mate.
Why
we've
am I struggling
got,
so
we've
hard?
We've all got a little bit of Downs in us. We're all spectrumized.
Like Joan.
Big Joan.
So many moments came from that episode.
That's fine. I think that's, you know, Christian, Big Sitch.
Yeah.
He loved that episode.
Did he?
Yeah, he's hyping that one up. The big one. Yeah. I think that was my favourite one we've done.
Really?
Yeah. This is getting up there, though.
We haven't even got to the best bits yet.
We might have to do a time skip at some point.
We might have to. So this caused a lot more friction with George, who began to tell the group that David is an interloper. Interloper
Meaning?
Just means... somebody who isn't wanted and who worms their way into a situation.
Poor Davy. Poor Vern.
David then informs the group that God has instructed him that he should marry Rachel Jones, who is 14 years old.
Oh, bloody hell.
Which he did. Yep.
There Somehow, goes my hero.
Watch him as he goes. Apparently, this union caused tensions to cool between him and George, mostly because George was like, well, at least he's not fucking my mum anymore.
It's just my sister. No,
but that
sister.
Didn't last. As tensions rose, the group split into different factions that supported the two. And David was an exceptional recruiter due to his charisma, so he gains more and more followers and popularity.
Right.
So, on it, this is actually mental. What I'm about to tell you is absolutely insane. So the following year, an administrative building on the site caught fire and there were allegations that it was either George or David who set the fire.
Oh, God.
George then accuses David... Oh, God. Oh my God. Okay, so George accused David of setting a fire and then David says, no man set that fire and it was a judgment from God as a result of George being next in line.
Maybe I'm the Messiah.
George then, you don't want to be a messiah if it's David Koresh
no,
that
don't.
You're modelling yourself
no,
off of.
No.
George then ousted David and his followers from the group, and they took up residence in nearby Palestine, Texas, in a camp in which conditions were supposedly awful due to the heat, due to a lack of hygiene. And they stayed there for 2 years.
Oh, kids.
And
not
even
hot.
Whilst he was there, he managed to recruit more people to come and live in his camp, which is insane. He even managed to go preaching in Palestine in this time. He travelled to Jerusalem, Israel gets another mention, where he claimed to receive a vision.
Jeho! Sorry.
Where he claimed to receive a vision that he was to become a martyr in Waco. One of his only visions that proved correct.
I'm a martyr now.
Spoiler. When Lois died in 1986, the branch of exiled Davidians wondered if they'd be able to return to the Mount Carmel Center. But despite the displacement, Koresh now enjoyed the loyalty of the majority of the branch Davidian community, even those that remained with George in the compound, because George wasn't a particularly good leader. So...
Come on, Georgie boy.
The most mental leadership challenge I have ever seen. There are conflicting reports. So David said that George challenged him to a kind of duel.
Yeah. Gloves are
in
on.
In which George said, we'll dig up a body and the first person to bring the person back to life gets control of the Davidians.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Referencing Joan again. Let's bring out the dead.
Literally. This is what's happening. So Rodin says that he was just moving the cemetery. And then Koresh...
Like the cemetery is moving house or something?
Apparently. He's okay. Digging up these bodies. So Koresh decides that obviously no one's going to win this contest.
No.
So he goes to the authorities to file charges against Rodin for illegally exhuming corpses. But
what
the authorities go, well, you're going to have to get us proof.
That's fair enough because he's been a snake.
Well, they don't know that. So they want photos of the corpse, photos of the exhuming actually happening. So then he seizes this opportunity to seek criminal prosecution of Rodin by returning to the Mount Carmel Center with 7 armed followers, allegedly attempting to get photographic proof of the exhumation.
That's mad.
Koresh's group was discovered by Rodin and a gunfire... battle breaks
shit.
Out.
What? What universe are we in?
Honestly,
it's not ours, surely.
Oh, it's mental.
Your eyes just went mad.
They have gone mad. I can't see.
They are very watery.
Better? Worse?
Yeah, it's fine.
It's just, I've put the light on its side to give me some better lighting.
Fair enough.
So when the sheriff arrived, I think it was just your comments about paedophilia. There goes
my pedo.
Watch him as he
comes.
So the police get called, and when the sheriff arrives, Rodin has already suffered a minor gunshot wound to the hand and chest, and he was pinned behind a tree. So as a result of the incident, Koresh and his followers were charged with attempted murder. And Rodin fled as he feared for his life. So the Mount Carmel Fair. Center at this point kind of is leaderless. And George rents it out to some people.
I wonder who steps up.
I wonder indeed. So at the trial, Koresh explained that he went to the center to uncover evidence of the criminal disturbance of a corpse by Rodin. And the Mount Carmel Center fell into disrepair. Koresh's followers were acquitted, and in Koresh's case, a mistrial was declared. So not necessarily acquitted, but there was a mistrial.
He's off.
Just as a little vignette into our man Rodin. So in 1989, Rodin murdered his roommate, Wayman Dale Adair.
That name deserves to die, to be fair.
With an axe blow to the skull after Adair stated his belief that he was the true Messiah. Everyone's Messiah. axe blow.
Oh, I thought it said axe bow. I was wondering what that was.
You got real excited there, didn't you?
I did. That sounded cool. Right, an axe blow to the head.
Roden claimed the man was sent by Koresh to kill him. He was judged insane at trial and confined to a psychiatric hospital at Big Spring, Texas. He spent the majority of his life there, then managed to escape.
My guy.
But he was found on the grounds having suffered a heart attack.
Oh, he didn't get very far. That's not an escape if he's found on the grounds.
He just got out of his room and then had a heart attack.
What a fucking twat.
What an end.
Have that, rodent. Little rat.
So since Rodent owed thousands of dollars in unpaid taxes on the Mount Carmel Center, Koresh and his followers were able to raise the money and reclaim the property. Rodin continued to harass the Koresh faction by filing legal papers whilst imprisoned, but this didn't get anywhere. And when Koresh and his followers reclaimed the Mount Carmel Center, they discovered that the tenants who had rented it from Rodin had left behind a meth lab.
Oh, nice.
Which Koresh reported to the police, and it was removed.
Oh.
Koresh was infatuated with American singer Madonna. God, he claimed, had even said to him, "I will give thee Madonna." Why don't you just go to her and be like, "God said, you're my wife."
My wife.
My wife.
Perfect timing, mate.
So on the 15th of May, 1990, Vernon Howell...
Sorry, I was just clicking things.
Thank you.
Who said that? Who did that?
What? No, it wasn't me.
What?
So, stop clicking things. On the 15th of May, 1990, Vernon Howell filed a petition in the California State Superior Court in Pomona to legally change his name for publicity and business purposes to David Koresh.
If you could change your name, what would you change it to?
Oh, my God. What a question.
Great content. Moving on.
What would you call it?
I think I would change mine to Maximus Meridius Virilius Doricus Decimus Chris.
Maximus Meridius Decimus. Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife.
That would be my revenge
in this life
name.
Or the next.
My surname is the next.
Maximus the next.
Yeah, Maximus the next. Middle name, Decimus Pedepidus.
Decimus. Meridius Decimus.
Yeah.
I would go with... I just thought of something and then forgot it. Uhtred.
Uhtred.
Uhtred. Uhtred. Joan. Joan.
Joan, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Joan.
I'd spell it John.
It's got like an umlaut above the O. John.
Jin.
Jin.
Destiny is all.
Destiny is all, John.
Excellent. Thank you for that. So his first name, Derek David, symbolised a lineage directly to the biblical King David, from whom the new Messiah would descend. And Koresh is the biblical name of Cyrus the Great, a Persian king who was named a messiah for freeing Jews during the Babylonian captivity.
Big up the Jews.
So whilst he's... big up the Jews.
No skin. Okay. Why was the foreskin cut off for the Jews?
I don't know. You'd have to ask a Jew.
I know many.
Get Rachel in here.
Big nose bitch.
She is particularly tight.
Yes, in all matters of the sense.
No.
You walked into that one.
With money.
And pussy. Okay.
No. My dad listens to this.
Oh, that's post-baby as well. That extra stitch.
So as a leader of the cult, membership increases massively. Many selling their belongings and moving their entire life to live at Mount Carmel. But the seemingly... harmonious and idyllic second setting at Waco soon turned sinister, with harsh rules and strange practices being implemented.
Paedophilia.
We do lead on to that. Can you stop?
Yeah, it's quite weird.
Can you stop that?
So
we'll
what?
Get there. We'll get to the paedophilia. I know you're really excited.
Bring it on.
Jeez. Strict rules around food were introduced, only allowing certain selected fruits to be eaten. Adults could not consume dairy. Bucks. Women were to give themselves up to David sexually whenever he wanted, regardless of whether they wanted to or not.
That's a fact ruined. Thank you.
No longer being satisfied with taking wives from husbands, he went on to demand that all marriages be dissolved. He said he wanted to have 24 children. Apparently that is...
What, like as wives?
No, just he wants to have 24 children, right, I guess, okay, as wives as well.
Yeah.
And therefore he should take as many wives as possible to make that happen.
Fair.
He took them in what is called a common law marriage. It's not an official marriage, but it is legal in Texas. And he states that all of this is his direct instruction from God. So he ends up with 20 wives, one of which was the 13-year-old sister of his legal wife, Rachel.
A harem of children wives.
A harem of child wives.
Yeah.
Bible study would happen 3 times a day, sometimes for up to 12 hours. There was one instance where apparently went on for 24 hours and military-style training. One of the cult members who spoke to her sister about her time there said that apparently nobody wanted to leave even during these 24-hour Bible practices because they fully believed he was a prophet. So he had them like eating out the palm of his hand, including the children.
What were they eating though?
Yeah, not certain fruits or dairy depending on how old they were.
Meats and fruits.
Well, meats and cheeses always pleases.
Oh my god.
You thought that was over.
Yeah.
Got it back.
It's back. It's back.
So he instructed his followers to fight each other to prepare for what his teaching centered around, which was the coming judgment day.
How did you spell coming?
Both. Yeah.
You came all over judgment day. Anger and,
oh my God.
Sorry.
You want me to get through this or
not? Sorry. Yeah.
He was quick to anger and regularly doled out beatings and punishments for infractions such as spilling milk. He literally cried over spilled milk. If he didn't feel that... I saw you lean forward there.
Not
as well. No.
If he didn't feel... Did the children cry over his spilled milk? Should I mute my
probably,
microphone?
Probably, yes, they did. Yes.
I'll mute my microphone.
If he did, no, don't mute your microphone.
That's a joke. I'm
jump
gonna do
in
that.
Less.
Okay.
If he didn't feel the children were fighting hard enough against each other, he would beat them himself using a wooden club named the Helper 2. There was no Helper 1, just the full title was the Helper 2. The Davidians began stockpiling weapons, and so strong was their belief that Armageddon was coming, eventually they had numerous illegal semi-automatic weapons in their cache, which numbered higher than the amount of followers in residence. More guns than people. So rumours began to circulate around the authorities about the weapons and the child rape. Koresh was contacted by the ATF about their concerns, and he told them that he was a weapons collector. And he actually invited them up to view the cache themselves. Also, I don't know if I'm saying cache or cache.
Cash. What is the ATF, cash, please? Cash. It is
the Department for Drugs and...
Arms?
Arms, Drugs and Tobacco.
Tobacco?
Yeah.
Wait, you said drugs. That would be ADF.
So, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives.
Oh, okay, right. Okay.
They just forgot the E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wouldn't ring a bell, would it, the ATF E?
The artifice. Okay, so he told them he was a weapons collector and invited them up to view the cache themselves, which they declined. They said no. So he
they
said,
believed him.
If you're worried about my weapons, come up and see them yourselves. And they said no, because they believed that they wouldn't be shown the entirety of the collection rather than just like going up and seeing for themselves.
So only one weapon they should have been worried about, though.
This dick...
His penis.
This schnitzel.
No, that's
so they maintained their belief that there were illegal activities happening at the site, and they wanted to get a warrant to search the premises specifically unannounced. So they wanted to search the premises of a mental Seventh Day Adventist fucking there's a judgment day coming Christians that are raping children and stockpiling weapons.
No.
And they
not
wanted
all
to
of
do
them
it
were,
unannounced.
Was only him raping the children?
I think so, yeah.
Because okay.
He broke up the husbands and wives. So it would kind of make sense. I mean, they might shag each other, but I think it was just him. But okay. It's kind of mental. In my mind, anyway. at the same time, I suppose in their mind, if they go unannounced, they're not going to have time to put together what actually happened, which was some kind of resistance. At the same time as the investigations into David and the Davidians, a local paper named the Waco Tribune was writing a story about the cult and the sinful Messiah, which was due for release on the 27th of February, 1993. This hastened the ATF's efforts to get a search warrant because they wanted to get the warrant before the article came out.
Okay.
And they eventually got the warrant, but it was granted only on or before the 28th of February, and it had to be during the day.
Wait, no, sorry. Don't worry.
So either on or before the 28th of February, but it had, to, it had to be during daylight hours, not
during
night.
The daytime, right, okay.
During the daytime. So we now move on to
dun, dun, dun,
the Siege
dun,
of Waco.
Dun. The Siege. Da, da, da,
da, the Siege of Waco. So, Sunday, the 28th of February, 1993. Having received the warrant, the ATF approaches Mount Carmel. About 100 agents from the... Oh, here you go. I've got the breakout here. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and the other one was explosives, but that wasn't broken out here, raid the compound near Waco, Texas, using armoured cattle carts and...
What the fuck is an armoured cattle cart?
An armoured cattle cart, mate.
I want an armoured cattle cart.
Are you going to look it up?
Yeah,
and armed with weapons, and to approach the compound at around 9:30 a.m.
That doesn't exist.
Okay.
9:30. They believed it is during the daytime, like they said they would.
It is very much during the daytime. Yeah. They believed that success relied on them using the element of surprise, but David had received a tip-off prior to the event. So a journalist who was on the way to the scene to cover the ATF's raid had stopped to ask directions from a UPS driver, and that UPS driver happened to be a brother-in-law to David's, and he called him to warn him.
Correct. So is UPS the one that doesn't have doors on their trucks?
Yeah. He just lent out. What, mate?
En route.
Yeah, it's up there. What are you going
you
for?
You what, bruv?
Oh, there's a raid. Mental. I mean, it's also not mental that it happened to be David's brother-in-law because he had 20 wives. So, a lot of people in the area were probably his brother-in-law. So, therefore, they were ready for the ATF's approach, and they chose to arm themselves and fight rather than flee. He portrayed this as a sign of the apocalypse, the judgment day, the coming of Christ. So, as they approach, Koresh opens the door as the ATF arrives and asks the officers what they're doing here. The ATF respond by rushing forward with weapons raised, and they demanded their surrender. Koresh then replies that there are women and children here in the compound, and then accounts differ as to who fires the first shot. But ATF claim it's the Davidians claim it's the ATF. All that matters is what follows, which is a huge firefight in which four agents are killed and five cult members. Big old cult battle. Eh?
Lots of death.
Many death. Koresh is amongst one of those wounded, and he's been shot in the hand.
Oh, not that
Thus
hand.
Begins the Waco siege. On this day, the first day, four children are released.
At least they're letting a few of them out.
They're letting a few out. So on the 1st of March, day two, after the failed raid, the FBI instructs the ATF to stand down, and two divisions of FBI are sent over to take control of the scene, both of which have very differing views as to how to control the situation. One wanted to engage the cult and get the children out. Engage with the cult, not engage the cult, sorry. Engage with them. Yeah. Get the children out. And the other wanted to be more aggressive. So the negotiation team are of the former. They have a softer approach, as it were. What they wanted to do was build trust and rapport with the Davidians, whilst the strategic hostage rescue team were focused on getting the hostages out and the situation resolved as quickly as possible. They're much more likely to move to action. So the agent in charge, Jeff Jamar, does the most mental thing. And he says both elements of the FBI are to conduct their own operation. So basically there's two sections here, both do whatever the fuck you want. And this leads to many crossed wires. On this day, 10 children are released.
They're getting out.
There are some getting out.
So they're engaging in negotiations.
Yeah.
David Koresh is engaging the children.
Yes. invariably cool. with his yeah. mangled hand. So hopefully on the 2nd of March.
Ring hand.
Oh, he's probably got too many rings. Really, with all the rings on his hand, he's got 20 wives. The bullet should have just bounced off.
The Lord of the Rings.
I hate that.
Sorry, mate. I'll cut that out.
On the 2nd of March. Thank you. On the 2nd of March, 2 women and 6 children were released. Koresh promises to surrender if a lengthy taped statement is broadcast on the radio. It's put out on radio and TV, but Koresh then doesn't give up. He states that he has communed with God, who told him he cannot surrender, and maintains that mass suicide is not on the cards.
God's
so basically,
a hero.
He gets his sermon out, but God was like, don't surrender.
Come on,
Davey.
Don't
do that.
We don't give up like that.
And this marks or kind of shows you what a difficult relationship it's going to be between the FBI negotiation team and Koresh, because whilst they do manage to build rapport and they do get some concessions on both sides, you're not really negotiating with Koresh. Well, you are, but he then
you're
negotiating
with God.
Yeah. Exactly, in his mind anyway. So he kind of there's a real back and forth, and he does renege on some of his deals, and because apparently God's told him he can't do it.
Does he have any advisors, or is it all just big Koresh?
Yes, he's got a mate Stephen.
Called God. Stephen.
Stephen. I didn't write his name down. Like
don't worry about
lieutenant.
It. It's not important.
So on the 3rd of March, federal agents say that Koresh says he will surrender when he receives further instruction from God. So that's the following day. The next couple of days, 2 more children leave the compound. Then,
well, so I think we're up to 22 children.
What did we get? We got 10, 4, 2.
Oh.
10, 4, 2, because there were two women as well. 4 on the first day, 10 on the second day. Oh, yeah, 6. Yep. So it's 20 and then 22. Yeah, you're right. So I missed it. 22
That's so
kids
clever.
And 2 women.
I told you I'd get a C in GCSE.
Yes, excellent. Well done. So day 8, March the 7th, despite the rapport being built between Koresh and the FBI, he
day
says
8?
He will not... Day 8. We're on day 8 now.
How long is this cunt fucking having a war with the FBI for?
Just you wait.
Fuck so, off, does it get longer? Do I double it?
Double it. Yeah, double it.
16, yeah.
Double it.
Oh, no, it's all coming back on me. 32.
No. Add half.
Oh, gee. Oh, wow. 48.
Plus 3.
51
days.
Fuck. What a boy, you know. He has got God on his side, to be fair.
We are at the very
fight
beginning.
With the FBI.
Yeah.
Are they scrapping this whole time? They're just having like.
They're
chats?
Not scrapping, no.
No,
they're not scrapping. So, despite the rapport, David says he's not going to be releasing any more children, as all the remaining children are his direct offspring. He then demands that milk and other provisions be supplied to look after the babies and medical supplies for the wounded.
Okay.
So then,
banned dairy.
For adults. Not for kids.
Adults, right, okay.
Yeah. Sorry. So on the 8th of March, which is day 9, 6 gallons of milk are delivered with listening devices very cleverly concealed in the packaging, which
Genius.
Marks the first attempt, the first of many attempts to get listening devices inside the compound and build their awareness of what's going
okay,
on inside. Due to stalling negotiations, the strategic team grows annoyed and decides to take action. So they tamper with the telephone wires, altering them so the Davidians can only make calls between them and the FBI negotiators, and then they start sporadically turning off the power. Yeah. They then also begin to start blasting music and noise at all hours to stop people from sleeping, including rabbits being killed, and the song "These Boots Are Made for Walking."
The FBI
as well
are
as,
doing this.
Yeah, yeah, the FBI are doing this, but this is the other team, not the negotiation team.
Think of the children.
As well as blaring lights into the compound. Yeah, exactly. So also, not only have you got kids that are trying to sleep in there, which is just horrendous, you've also got sleep-deprived adults with semi-automatic
with
weapons.
Yeah.
So, you know, clever. But well. It's just one of those instances in which the two teams of FBI, their tactics are not aligned. Exactly. Yeah. Because how can you build trust and rapport with somebody in a really intense emotional situation as it is if you are also playing rabbits being killed and trying to defy them as thieves?
That's a bit of a torture technique, isn't it?
It is a torture technique, yeah. Literally,
don't sleep, listen to these rabbits getting killed, and watch Watership Down.
Yeah. Oh my God! Watership Down, what a film.
I've never seen it, you know.
Scarred me. Have you seen The Black Cauldron as well?
What? I've never seen Watership Down.
Oh my God, Watership Down is... It scarred me. It's not a kid's film. It's not a kid's
film. The rabbit version of David Koresh, isn't it?
It literally is. I was about to say, it's a cult.
Damn. Maybe I should watch it.
You should, yeah. You should have watched it in preparation for this, really, shouldn't you?
Yep.
So on day 13, two adults leave the compound. So four adults, 22 kids so far. So on the 18th of March, we've jumped ahead, the FBI begins using... the FBI using loudspeakers to blare tapes of the negotiations to cultists after the negotiations stall due to the harsh tactics of the strategic team. So Koresh no longer wants to come to the negotiating table, obviously, because of their torture tactics. So they decide to play the recorded tapes of the negotiations to try and set the cult members against each other.
Okay.
They also play messages to the cult members that if they leave the compound, they'll be treated fairly. They'll be treated fairly and with respect.
Yeah.
So as a direct result, two further cultists leave the compound the following day. On the 21st of March, seven cult members leave. Throughout this time, Koresh maintains that he's not holding anyone hostage and that they are free to leave if they want, but that he will stay as my God told me to wait. Later testimonies of cult members contradict this statement, as many left during the night and crawled through fields to get out, fearing repercussions if they were caught.
Jesus Christ.
So, people managed to, either from family members, all the people that left, said that, no, we were... actually, it was really interesting. So this woman managed to call her sister. So a woman who's inside the compound, she calls her sister. And the sister goes, right, for every answer, no means yes, yes means no, basically.
Opposite day.
So she said, are you being held against your will?
No.
She said no. Yeah,
big
exactly.
Wink. Yeah, okay.
And like, do you want to leave? And
yes.
She was like, yeah, exactly. She was like,
wait, no.
She said no, which obviously meant yes. So they were being held against their will. On the 22nd of March, the authorities blast the compound with chants of Tibetan monks. Don't know why they just said that
strange.
Day. The following day, one member leaves. And then negotiations stall again on the 24th of March due to the blaring music and the lights shining. So on day 26, the 25th of March, the FBI issues an ultimatum to Koresh, demanding that he allow more people to leave the facility or they will take more extreme action. The ultimatum is ignored, and as a result, FBI tanks approach the facility.
Wait, what?
Yeah, tanks. FBI tanks.
As in
a tank.
Tanks.
Yeah,
oh
yeah,
my
tanks.
God.
He claims that Koresh gives a speech about being an American and doing anything it takes to repel the enemy. And
he'd fit in the modern day society, wouldn't he?
Yeah, pretty well. Which doesn't say, I think that says a lot more about Americans than it does about Koresh.
Yeah.
The ultimate, he says he will bite the tires of the tanks to stop them. So I'm guessing these are the not tracked tranks or
tracked tanks
to stop them. Over the next few days, the tanks just roam around the compound, flattening cars.
And what are they doing there? Why did they think, right, we've been stalled here for 26 days, let's just bring a tank?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they
not
wanted to...
Not one shot fired.
Again, it's just completely... No shots fired. It's just,
mental.
Again, completely different between the negotiation tactics and this hostage rescue team.
Good cop,
team.
Bad cop.
Yeah, but in the worst
Very
way.
Very bad cop, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So on the 29th, On the 29th day, March 28th, Koresh details that he is awaiting a message from God and that he has no intention of dying. Therefore, the FBI maintains hope, especially on the negotiating side. So they're like, right, okay, he's got no intention of dying, either by suicide or suicide by cop or whatever. They're still hoping they can at least get more people out and resolve this peacefully. So at the beginning of April, it's Easter, Passover as well. Some of the Ashtoreth Tuesday, whatever. There's some important...
Pancake Day.
Pancake Day. Koresh writes two letters, which are then analysed. Funny enough,
all his wives had pancakes.
Oh, what, because they're kids?
Yeah, right. Flat-chested. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah, no tits.
Excellent. Not the, the full-breasted woman of Holy Spectre.
Yeah.
So these letters are analysed by the FBI, and as a result of their examinations, they believe that Koresh has absolutely no intention of surrendering and that they are dealing with a psychotic and increasingly psychotic individual. So I don't know, what clued you into that fact, do you think?
Speaks to God. Yeah. Kisses kids.
Yeah, marries kids.
Fingers kids.
Yeah, has sex with kids.
He might be a bit odd.
Says, Judgment Day's coming and he's a prophet. I don't know.
Yeah.
Really clever analyst there.
Normal behaviour, isn't it?
So on the 12th of April, which is Easter Sunday, the FBI formulated a plan to use tear gas to force the Davidians out of the compound. So Janet Reno, who's the district attorney or deputy attorney? I think district attorney for Texas. She's at first reluctant to agree, but on hearing the evidence of the sexual exploitation of children, she gives the go ahead for the plan. So they start planning a storming of the compound with tear gas.
Through this whole thing, when the negotiations are happening, is it all over the phone? Is he like popping out on the doorstep?
It's all over the phone. He's not come out at all.
Right, okay.
Also, this entire siege is being covered 24/7 by news teams. So
Christ alive.
It's everywhere. It's over the whole world.
I hope they've got a long TV reel because we're into some
crazy.
Days
crazy.
Yeah.
Apparently, Oprah Winfrey does a special on her show about
of
it.
Of course.
And about David Koresh and stuff like that. Like, it is everywhere. It's across the world, and people are seeing it play out on their TV screens.
Mental.
So on
it's
the 14th,
on Netflix.
Oh yeah, have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah, it's good.
Awesome. Yeah.
On the 14th of April, Koresh then sends out word that he will surrender after writing a manuscript in which he reveals the contents of the seven seals referred to in the Book of Revelations in the Bible. He then goes on this rambling rant about how God had told him to write this book. It also comes to light on this day that the Davidians have up to a year's worth of supplies. So people are realising that this siege could go on for even longer.
Yeah, they're there for the long haul, aren't they?
Yeah. On the 16th of April, the FBI says that the agency has its own time schedule and won't wait forever for Koresh to give up. So they're really trying to put the pressure on him.
I wonder what their time schedule is. Or if they're just lying.
Well, you're about to find out. So, day 50, which is the 18th of
Fucking
April.
Hell, mate. Well, at least we're getting towards the end.
Yeah. Bill Clinton signs the order to allow the FBI to use tear
Big
gas
Clinton.
On the compound. Billy Clinton
Big
comes
Billy
into
Clinton
it. It goes all
there.
The way to the top. So, Fucking he hell. Said, yes, use the tear gas.
Yeah, get in there, boy.
So, on the 19th of April, which is day 51, the FBI announced
Judgment
their plan.
Day.
It is Judgment Day. Literally is Judgment Day because that's what David calls it. The FBI enacted their plan to use the tear gas, firing it into the compound. They are met with return fire from the Davidians and call for yet more gas to try and overwhelm the cult members. An hour after the attack begins, Reno and Clinton hold a meeting to discuss the event so far, and they seem confident that the situation is under control.
Sounds it.
Yeah, however, at 11:40, all the tear gas is used up. So they are... and no one's come out.
What time did they start the gassing?
Eventually... Huh?
What time did they start the gassing?
9 or 10.
So they've done about an hour and a half of pure gas.
Oh, I think it was 10:30 or 11 when Reno and Clinton meet.
Right, okay. It's been an hour or so of gassing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they wait outside whilst the tear gas forces the occupants to flee. At the same time, military tanks this time charge the building and cause structural damage to the build to the building itself. And at 11:45, so 5 minutes later, the wall to the south of the building collapses. All of this is broadcast live on TV, so everyone around the wall, around the world is watching this. And it's quite
around that ward.
Famous. Yeah, around the ward. It's really famous.
I'm not surprised.
Footage. So, 25 minutes later, much to the horror of everyone around the world, the compound begins to burn. And the day is particularly windy and the fire grows rapidly. The FBI plead for the Davidians to leave the compound before it's too late, and 9 adults manage to escape. But the world watches in horror as the rest of the children is engulfed in flames.
The children and engulfed in flames or the building, sorry?
The building with the children in it.
Oh, no.
And all hope of saving any further occupants is lost. It took so long for the fire. I think the fire brigade were held up. I think from what I remember from the documentary, they were held up before they were able to get there. And why there weren't fire trucks on standby is another mystery and something that is
Do we know how it's set alight? Sorry.
We'll come on to that.
Okay.
76 people died that day. 2 fucking pregnant hell. Women, 25 children, and then Koresh himself.
Oh, not David.
No, David died.
Not our Davey.
So the April the 23rd, a few days later, there's large-scale scrutiny as to how the situation was handled, and President Clinton then defends the government's handling of the Branch Davidian case, but he promises a full investigation.
Okay.
And then 2 days later, the first body in the rubble is identified as Koresh's brother-in-law, another one of them, David Michael Jones. And then 4 days later, they say that they have got all 76 bodies.
Jesus.
Yeah. So on the 2nd of May, it's announced that through dental records and x-rays, that Koresh's body has been found. He was found with a gunshot wound to the forehead and a weapon next to him. So it's like the either he took his own life or it was his second in command that shot him himself before shooting. Shooting himself in the head when he realised they weren't getting out. It's still unknown to this day who set the fire that ended up engulfing the building. So it was 3 separate fires set around the compound and in this building. And it's important to remember that the arson of the administrative building during the confrontation between George Roden and David was clearly set by one of them. So it might play into David's playbook to have set the fires and martyred himself, because he said he had this vision of being a martyr. The FBI claim to this day that there is evidence retrieved from listening devices that shows that the Davidians set the fire themselves. But it's also important to note that the type of tear gas used was in fact flammable in certain circumstances, and also to remember just how much of it was used.
Someone having a fag.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So one of the many conspiracy...
Not a gay, a cigarette.
Yes, a cigarette for the American listeners. One of the many conspiracy theories about this, because a lot of people think it was a cover-up, it all centres around the front doors to this building. They are heavy-duty steel double doors, and a lot of people speculate that it should provide evidence somehow, I'm not entirely sure, of who shot the first rounds during that first day of the siege. They withstood the fire because they're made of metal, both of them. But later at the trial, only the left-hand side of the door was presented in evidence. The right-hand side was somehow lost. So
how do you lose a door?
Well, exactly. So Dick DeGurin, cracking name.
Big Dick.
Big Dick, who is a Texas-based attorney, he testified after having visited the site that on the right-hand side of the door, there was a protruding mark on the inside, which suggests that it was a result of fire going from the outside in.
Oh, sorry.
The opposite.
Yeah,
And it's that side that was somehow lost.
Doesn't sound like American law enforcement to shoot first, though, does it?
What? Shoot first, ask questions later? Especially in the early 90s. Wild, wouldn't it? Yeah. I've never heard of that.
Imagine that.
But the left-hand side had door marks going in and out. And that's the one that was submitted into evidence. So it's convenient the right-hand door went missing. However, I don't understand how they would have told which one was shot at first, because it doesn't matter if one door only has one mark on it. You can't say for certain which one was first.
It's irrelevant when there's been a big shootout, isn't it?
Well, yeah, kind of. But then it's the whole self-defense thing, but you can't really have self-defense against the law. Well, you certainly can't.
Definitely not.
So in 1999, the same Janet Reno appoints an inquiry to find out what happened at the siege, and whoever it was that she appointed, Bill Clinton, was quite happy with it. And they had to answer two questions in this inquiry, which was there a cover-up by law enforcement, and were the government officials directly responsible for the deaths of the people inside? Unsurprisingly, in 2000, all FBI officials were acquitted of any wrongdoing and found no evidence of a cover-up.
What a surprise.
So looking back through the tapes, David actually never stated that he and the Davidians would have weren't going to come out. And in fact, you know, he said he was working on that book.
Yeah.
There was correspondence on the day before the siege that the book was nearly finished, and that they had asked for some more writing supplies in order to finish the book. David also reportedly prophesied that there was going to be a judgment day on the final day of the siege, day 51. So either he managed...
Genius.
But then, to be fair, having said that, if he set the fires, he would have known all of this would have...
He set fire.
He wasn't... To the Davidians. To the Davidians. He might not have known that they were going to attack him with tear gas and the tanks, but if he set the fires, then he knew that there was going to be a judgment day of sorts, because that was going to be the end of the siege.
Yeah. He didn't set that one up. So I reckon FBI shot first... David set fire.
ATF at that time, wasn't it?
ATF shot first.
Yeah, on the first day. David set fire. I can't remember. I might have said FBI. I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It's a while ago now.
All these three-letter acronyms. Yeah. Okay. So, aftermath. What I found really interesting was that I read a book by Chris Voss called Never Split a Difference about negotiation. He was a lead negotiator with the FBI. He wasn't on the Waco case, his boss, who was also a lead negotiator for 10 years with the FBI, was the lead negotiator on this case.
That's interesting.
And negotiation tactics kind of had to evolve after the lessons learned at Waco came to light. The tactics that they used themselves were, in a sense, successful, because their aim was a strategy named Trickle Flow Gush. Second time Gush has been mentioned. By lead negotiator Gary Nosner. So Gary Nosner is this guy that was for 10 years a lead negotiator with the FBI and 25 years in negotiation. They managed to get 44 members to leave in the end. And they negotiated such wins as getting the milk with the listening devices into the compound. They were also aiming to build rapport with David and stall for time, hoping that the longer they stalled for time, more people would choose to leave and it would become a war of attrition rather than actual bullets. And that the siege would lose momentum as more people left David's side.
I feel like the negotiators are on top until the other half start kicking in with the
literally
torture.
Yeah. But then on the other side, they weren't successful in avoiding the tragic outcome. And the lessons are to be learned in terms of the cohesion and support from the leadership.
Yeah, fair.
Because as we were mentioned, they were allowed to conduct their own missions as they saw fit. And there were a real breakdown in communications, which led to the souring of relations with the Davidians themselves. So after the Waco siege, the surviving branch Davidians either faced federal prosecution or were imprisoned. Or they went on to lead new communities, such as Charles Pace's the group called The Lord Our Righteousness, which is at Mount Carmel. He's kind of made this new... It's much smaller. I think there's 12 members of this. This is as of 2013.
Is it kind of extreme?
I'll tell you about what they believe in a sec.
Child molester?
No, I don't know anything about that.
That's fine then.
Which includes a new church and a memorial built by survivors like Clive Doyle. So
Club
The survivors who escaped were among the 9 people who were arrested and faced charges, and 8 were eventually convicted on various firearms and other charges, as well as involuntary manslaughter.
Manslaughter.
So some survivors, such as Clive Doyle, remained on or near the Mount Carmel site. In 1999, a new chapel was built, which serves as a memorial for the dead and a place of worship. So the new community, the Lord Our Righteousness, was formed under Charles Pace. So Pace used to be a member. He was a member of the cult when the siege happened. He's a herbalist now, and he lost his foot in a tractor accident. I enjoyed that little...
I like that.
Detail. Yeah. So he claims to be a teacher of righteousness, not a prophet, and he leads a community that continues to await the end of times and believes that the world is headed for a catastrophic one world government. So he thinks that all countries are going to collapse, there's going to be these massive overlords, and that's going to be the judgment day. He said, as of 2013, that he and the other members of his order are still waiting for the resurrection of Koresh and the other members that died that day as part of what he calls a special group. He believes that God will bring them back.
These people are fucking mental, aren't they?
Like, how many times do there have to be... People have to say there's going to be a judgment day and there's no judgment day for you to stop believing it.
Well, there's some silly bitch fucking I saw on TikTok that thinks the rapture is coming this Wednesday.
I can't wait for tomorrow for there to be no rapture. Also, what time? Because there's loads of different time zones. Honestly.
For whatever time we want.
Yeah. Oh, God said. God said he didn't fancy doing the rapture today. So we're going to do it another day. Surely they don't believe it. But then the people that they're telling do. And that's just crazy.
Fuck it. People are just ludicrous, mate.
That concludes the... That is the siege of Waco.
I love it.
In all its nonsense glory.
I love it.
It was everything we expected it to be. I mean, I don't love about the child exploitation and death.
Minus the noncery and children's bits. It's an amazing story. And it comes with it, you know. You can't have one without the other.
No, you have to take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
Happy with the sad.
Take the nonce with the god.
Yeah, nonce god.
Nonce god. David Koresh, nonce god. There's our title.
Right. Nonce god.
Nonce god. Write that down for me because I'll forget.
Oh, we're not going to go for Wacky Waco.
We can go for Wacky Waco.
I'll change the on my second screen.
Pick one. We'll pick one later on.
Not scored. Cool. So, shall we move on to...
I know what's coming.
Chris's Fact Corner.
No, I need to... Don't skip out there features, mate. How would I have done it differently?
Shit.
That has to come first. That's the whole premise of the podcast.
And our USP that isn't becoming so USP anymore.
I'm in a big struggle with this one. I can't side with the Davidians.
Oh, so you draw the line there. That's where the line is for you.
Children raping is pretty weird, bro.
On the side of the terrorists on 9/11.
They didn't rape children.
No, but that you know of. But yeah, okay. So how would you have done it differently?
I feel like the terrorists should have hijacked a plane and crashed. No.
Crashed, yeah.
They should have hijacked. No, right. It's got to be an assassination.
I think there's only one thing you could
from
have done
from the inside.
Here. I think you should have got a body out and challenged Koresh to a
resurrection duel.
Yeah, and when he didn't manage to do it, everyone would lose faith in him and he'd be done. Well, it's the only way you could do it.
Yeah.
Other than get George Roden out, but he's dead at this point.
George Roden is dead. I'm stumped on this one. I'm out.
I've told you, necromancy duel.
Yeah, necromancy duel.
This is all you can do in this situation. As soon as the siege starts, get a dead body, preferably one of the people that had already died. Like,
one of the kids.
The cult member. Yeah, one of the cult members that was dead.
That.
Yeah, if he could stop fucking the corpse for long enough, he'd probably... would have tried to raise it again.
Necrophiliac, necromancer.
Necromancer.
Necrophilism duel.
Necrophiliac.
Who can have sex with the first dead child? But to be fair, the only dead kids at this point are burnt. Crispy.
That might have turned him off.
That would have been weird. Yeah.
Who knows the limits of his nonsense?
You don't want ash on your penis.
No. So if they get one and then they say, right, either you bring it back to life... or give up.
Yeah, necromancy.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. I'm doing the job for you. Honestly, why don't you think about it?
Think about it.
Now we're on to Chris's Fact Corner.
What have I got? You did get one of them, which upset me.
I even checked with you about Dr. Pepper.
No, it wasn't that one. It was about the diet.
Yeah, go on. I might miss things.
Did you know? Wait, do you want food first or food later?
Which one's the food one? Is in like your usual? That one always comes second. Yeah, the usual always comes second.
Food always comes last, you know.
Yeah.
Just like how a man should.
Yeah, excellent. Okay.
Did you know Koresh died at a sacred age?
How old was he?
33 years old, and that was how old Jesus died when he was crucified.
And he was a carpenter.
See?
We were still out on whether Jesus was a nonce, though.
You never know. I reckon he probably was. Where else did the popes get it from? Where else did the popes read the scripture? Thou shalt nonce.
Incredibly intertwined with the Christian faith.
Exactly. So Jesus touched kids.
Okay. You heard it here first.
And gave them wine, not water.
Yes. Groomed them.
Okay, on to my second fact of two.
Yeah. Oh my God. What's it going to be?
It's not great, mate. It just talks about how much ammunition that they had stored.
What?
Approximately 1.3 to 1.5 million rounds of ammunition of various calibers were stored on their little campsite.
How do they think it was going to be?
Well, they were just bringing it in. They were just bringing it. He obviously knew what was going to kick off at some point, or they were selling it to keep money. Because I think he had a net worth of about $5 million.
No.
So he was making money somehow.
It was probably, I think people gave up their belongings to him and money to him when they joined.
Maybe. He had some dollar and he had a lot of ammunition.
Wow.
How do you know? Supposedly, as well, he had over 300 firearms from assault rifles, pistols, shitloads of grenades. So, yeah, he had a lot of money, a lot of ammunition, a lot of guns. So he was either planning to sell it on for more money or he knew what was going to kick off.
Yeah.
Touch kids, have firefights.
The two commandments.
The best two.
Wait. So what's your food one?
Right. So, although we have established that he was a bit of a, I don't want to use the R word, not rapist, because he was one of them.
Yeah.
At school.
Yeah.
How many nerds, as in the sweets?
Yeah.
American candy. Can you fit in an empty hand grenade? Because he had lots of hand grenades.
Okay. I'm going to say 600.
Double it.
1,200.
Times it by 10.
I hate you so much. 120,000. Wait.
What?
12,000.
Double it.
24,000.
Double that.
48,000.
61,000 approximately.
I don't believe it.
Which I don't think makes sense.
I don't believe it. Nope.
That's a lot, isn't it?
On that one.
Because what's a grenade? That big, like the size of an avocado?
Yeah, an avocado.
I'm not fitting 61,000. That's such a middle class way of...
It's so middle class, isn't it? How many avocados fit into a grenade?
One, evidently. I don't think I'm getting 60,000 nerds in an avocado.
No, that's wrong.
I think someone's lied to me.
Yeah, I think I was closer. Maybe 1,000, but even then, no.
Let's go 500.
Yeah. Easy. So that's my facts. Okay, cool. Thank you very much for your facts.
They were good, weren't they?
They were good. I feel like you could have done a bit more research to maybe do the building that they're in and how many like pints of milk could have fit in it, but that might have been a bit on the
dairy,
nose.
Were they?
The kids were. That's why they got cartons of milk in.
You couldn't fit a lot of milk in a building because it would leak out the door.
Yeah, cartons of milk. Do you not listen to anything I say?
Not really.
Oh, God. What is the point of this podcast?
Not a lot.
Okay, so yes. Excellent. Thank you very much for those facts. They were incredibly interesting. Not as interesting, I think, as my Dr. Pepper fact, which really should have been top of your list. And you
didn't
could have done how many Dr. Pepper bottles in Waco or something like that. But,
cans.
You know,
cans are easier to stack.
Wait, not... Yeah, but you're doing them one side by side.
Yeah, how do you stack a bottle?
Just one next to each other.
No, that's a bit lame.
Bottle. Bottle. Bottle.
Yeah, but now put your bottle on top of that bottle.
No, why would you do that though? You're going to do the area.
Because I can't Google how many.
No, you're going to do the area. Not like there's a Waco. It's a place.
Ah.
Oh, you next don't time. Listen.
I don't care.
Riz. Okay. Cool.
Megan's riddle.
Shit. I literally didn't even think about this.
Think about it, bitch.
Okay. 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 Go okay. On. Okay.
You've got this.
That's one mad bulldog.
I like it. I won't butt in this time.
I think that was bad though. But I think a lot of people will guess it. So it'll be the first person that gets it will get the key ring.
Okay.
That's one mad bulldog.
You know where to find us, guys. It'll
join
be in the description below.
And find communicate us. With us in the Gmail above.
Or the Instagram.
Or below.
Or the TikTok.
Gmail.
You can
in
message
the bio.
Us.
Just,
you can
just message talk
us.
To us.
It's 2025.
Just talk to us.
You can text me if you know me.
You can voice note and we can play it.
Yeah, let's do, yes, voice. We'd
first
have to,
person that sends a voice note also gets a key ring.
Yes, voice note comes first.
Cool. Okay.
Cool. Well, right, are we nearly done? Because I'm desperate for a wee.
Yes, so
yeah,
fine.
I'm really
hungry.
Need to go wee-wees now.
Let's go.
And
see
Liverpool
you all
have kicked off,
next
so
week.
Bye, bitches.
The mad bulldog. Bye.
The maddest bulldog of all. Bye, bitch.
Bye.